Hello, and welcome back to the Instant Mom Podcast. It has been almost a year since my last episode, so as you can imagine, we have a lot to catch up on. I thought I'd spend the first half of the podcast episode catching everyone up on what's going on with us, and then the second half, I really wanted to address some things that I keep seeing pop up over and over again in foster parent Facebook groups in particular, and that is foster parents hoping and asking for prayers that their case ends up in adoption and how really, really wrong on so many levels that is. But before I get into that rant, I will start with catching everyone up. So if you listened to the last episode, or if you haven't listened, or you listened a year ago now, I'll do a quick recap. And the last time we chatted, we were reunifying baby Olivia with her mom. So in May of 2021, so a year and some months ago, we got a call from Safe Families. For those of you who don't know, Safe Families is a nonprofit that supports parents when they are going through crisis and is sort of a diversion from foster care. So it allows pre-screened, pre-trained host families like myself to care for children, sometimes for just a few hours or a few days, sometimes up to a year, while their parents work on their lives, potentially seek treatment for addictions, maybe get back on their feet and find a home, etc. And then they can see and visit and take back their children at any time without having to get involved with the foster care system. So it's a really great way to keep families together and to support particularly single mothers who don't have a network. So we got a call from Safe Families asking if we could provide respite for a mom who was just tired. It was a young mom who was about 20 years old, I believe. She had a three-month-old baby girl, and she was just overwhelmed and exhausted and wanted to know if somebody could watch her baby for the weekend so she could get a break. And it's really funny because I distinctly remember when I got this call, I was gardening in our backyard, and I had just decided we were going to take another break from fostering, and we got this call. And I said, okay, well, we're not fostering, but we can do this very short-term respite situation if you can promise us it's only going to be a weekend. And they said, yep, absolutely, we got it. It's only going to be a weekend. Long story short, a few days later, the mom asked if we would adopt her baby. And after getting her an attorney, getting ourselves an attorney, encouraging mom to seek counseling, to work through her decision, etc., mom actually signed adoption consents for us. And we filed our petition to adopt. And we were actually just a few weeks away from our court date that would have made the adoption final. And Olivia would have been ours forever. This was considered a private adoption as Olivia was not in foster care. And then a few weeks before the adoption court date, I was chatting with Olivia's birth mom because we had a really great relationship and it was going to be an open adoption. And she asked if I would consider dissolving my petition to adopt because she had changed her mind and really wanted to parent. And of course, this was a really tough thing to hear because we had bonded with Olivia at this point. It had been about 5 months that she had been with us. So we were really bonded. We were really excited about the adoption moving forward. My whole family and all of my friends had met Olivia, but I also knew that I could not live with myself and could not sleep at night and could not in good conscience say, sorry, no givesy backsies. So of course I said, yes, we will support you in that choice. And I had my attorney dissolve our petition to adopt. And a few days later, we reunified Olivia with her birth mom. And when we reunified Olivia with her birth mom, we provided a lot of material support because Olivia's birth mom was not in a very stable situation. But with a little bit of help, she could be in a stable situation. So I provided her with, we loaded our minivan up and had three complete minivan packed car fulls of baby gear and furniture and toys and diapers. I got her literally a year's supply of diapers and formula and clothes and toys and books and swings and cribs and high chairs. I mean, just everything. Because I didn't want her to have to spend what little income she had on the necessities. I really wanted to get her set up. And in addition to that, I also gave her a not insignificant amount of cash so that she was getting a new apartment so she could have her first and last month's rent and then a couple of months buffer so that she wouldn't have to worry about homelessness as she was trying to provide stability for herself and Olivia. And in retrospect, this was very naive of me, and I should not have done it this way. What I should have done, and what I have learned now, is that I should have said, absolutely, we will support you in reunifying. Why don't you take Olivia back for a couple of weeks and make sure this is the right decision for you? And if you still want to parent, then after those few weeks, then we will dissolve our petition to adopt, to give ourselves a little bit of protection there. And I definitely should not have given her cash. I should have, if I was going to pay her rent, I should have probably just paid the rent directly to the landlord, or perhaps given her, I don't know, gift certificates to stores, although I guess that still could have been used nefariously as well. But anyway, I was very optimistic in the way that I handled the situation because I really loved Olivia's birth mom and we had this great relationship and she was just so smart and she had such a bright future ahead of her if she just had a little bit of help, and I wanted to be that help for her. And because I had bonded with Olivia and Olivia was almost legally my daughter, I wanted to make sure that Olivia was going to be well taken care of. And so I wanted her mom to have every resource in the world so that Olivia wouldn't want for anything. So we dropped Olivia off with all of this stuff and money and everything else on a Sunday afternoon. And a few hours later, by that evening, I had texts and calls from birth mom saying, I can't do this. I'm so sorry. Can you come pick Olivia up? I don't want a parent after all. And I admit I was a little annoyed when I got those messages because I'm like, oh my gosh, like, you know, you just can't keep toying with our emotions like this and you can't keep toying with Olivia like this. But I also understood the panic that she probably felt in those first few hours of being like, oh my God, can I really do this? Because I've felt that panic every time I get a new foster placement, that initial panic of like, oh my God, can I do this? Can I do this? No, never mind. Take it back. Right. So I told her, I said, you know, I kind of tried to talk her down. I gave her a little pep talk. I said, you can do this. We're here for you. We are your support. And I truly meant all of that. And I encouraged her to give it a few days to see if that panicked feeling went away. And just to keep me posted, and we would support her no matter what. And the next day, we were texting almost constantly. And the next day, she texted me in the morning, and she texted me these great, cute pictures of Olivia and feeding Olivia breakfast. And she's like, I feel so much better. Thanks for helping talk me down. I do think I was just panicking last night. And she seemed like she was in a really good place that morning. And we continued to text over the next day or two, and things were going well. And she'd send me cute videos of Olivia. And, you know, she just seemed like that was a temporary moment of panic. There was nothing that she had said in the following text messages that indicated that she was still struggling or was thinking of anything else besides parenting Olivia. And then about 2 days later, I get a text message at night from her. And it's this long text message in which she tells me that she has decided not to parent after all, and that she gave Olivia to some people in a different city. And that's kind of how she phrased it. I gave Olivia to these people. And so initially I start panicking of like, oh my God, who are these people that you gave her to? Like, were these just random people off the street? Did you find them on Craigslist? Like, how did this happen? So I start sending her these texts being like, who are these people? How did you find them? Do you know if they had a home study and background check done? Like, you know, I was panicking. I was like, there are a lot of people on Facebook in these adoption groups who say they want a baby, but they had no one to check them out. Like, is she in danger? So that was my first instinct, was like, oh my God, is Olivia safe? And then I get a call from BioMom's former foster mom. So Olivia's birth mom was in and out of foster care when she was a kid and really aged out of foster care. And I had heard about this foster mom. I think it was the last foster mom that Olivia's mom lived with before she aged out of foster care. And excuse me, was probably the closest thing that mom had to an actual mother figure. And so this woman calls me, and she was very confused, and she basically was like, okay, so I just found out that you guys were in the picture, and I just now realized that you have had Olivia for all of these months. It gets very confusing and convoluted, but long story short is that birth mom, to a lot of people, pretended like she had been parenting Olivia this whole time and didn't tell a lot of people about us, or that she consented to have us adopt, and then made it seem like she was deciding now for the first time to place her child for adoption. And so when her former foster mom heard this, she was like, okay, sure. If you've decided that you want to place your child for adoption, I know this family through my church who has been looking to adopt, and I should connect you with them. So foster mom basically connected Olivia's mom to this new adoptive family, and did not know that we existed. Did not know that we still had guardianship of Olivia, did not know that we still had a petition to adopt Olivia, did not know any of this. And so when mom finally did find out that we existed, she called me and she was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry, realizing what she had done, that she had essentially promised the baby to this other random couple, not realizing that we were already well on our way to adopt Olivia. And, you know, sort of told me all of these lies that birth mom had been telling her. And I got a better picture of Olivia's birth mom. I learned that she had been fighting with some substance abuse and also had some mental health challenges that I was not previously aware of. And I realized that evening that we'd basically been scammed, that birth mom, well, here's what I think happened. I do think that birth mom wanted to parent. I do think that was a legitimate desire she had. But I think that the second it happened, once we dropped off Olivia and all of her things, that birth mom realized that she did not actually want to parent. I think at that point, she was too ashamed to come back to us. And I think she took the cash that we gave her and used it on feeding her addiction. And I think she sold most, if not all, of the baby gear that we provided to also feed her addiction, because she also pretended like to her foster mom and to these new adoptive parents that she didn't have any of that stuff. So I think I'd like to think that her intentions were good and she really did want to parent, but that when she saw all of this cash and when she saw all of the things that she could sell for a lot of money, and then faced with the stress of having her baby with her and the stress of just parenting an infant, the addiction won. And I think she was too ashamed to come back to me and say, okay, I took all your money and I used it on drugs and I sold a bunch of your stuff, but will you still take Olivia back? And so I think when her foster mom found this new adoptive family, she just was like, yep, give Olivia to this family. And I just want to pretend like this whole thing never happened. That's what I think. I don't know. I'm not really sure what happened, but that's what I think was going through birth mom's head. So in any case, once foster mom had called and told me all of this backstory, I thought, okay, well, this is okay. Because I can talk to this new family who now has Olivia and let them know what's going on. And surely they will give Olivia back to us, because at this time we still had legal guardianship. Our petition to adopt was in the process of being dissolved, but we still had legal guardianship. So, they did not have a legal right to keep Olivia. And in fact, mom didn't really have a legal right to keep Olivia at that point either. And I found out that this new family, he was a Christian pastor. So I thought, okay, maybe this man of God will do the right thing, which was hilarious and also naive of me. So I reached out to this family. It took me a couple of days to find out their name, but I was able to get their name. And I sent the father a message on Facebook Messenger because that's the only contact info I had for him. I sent him a very polite email explaining who we were and that mom had asked us to adopt, and we'd had Olivia since she was 2.5 months old, and we'd had her for many months, and we were 2 weeks away from our court date, and that we still had legal guardianship of her. And I said, can you please do the right thing and return Olivia? And he wrote back and he basically said, we never want to hear from you again. And if you ever try to reach out to our family or Olivia, we will sue the living daylights out of you. And that was it. Well, and he did also say that he did not intend to tell Olivia about this story. Which is it's so unethical on so many levels. You know, to lie to your child about where she spent the first 5 months of her life, to lie to your child about how you ended up getting her, to not care that Olivia was bonded with us, and to just be greedy and want a healthy newborn and to keep that newborn at any cost, even if it wasn't legally or ethically yours to keep. So I was kind of heartbroken and furious and just sick to my stomach about all of this. And at the same time, people on Instagram were sending me, a couple people actually sent me a video on TikTok that had gone viral of a Christian pastor in Indiana who was showing off his new baby and said, look at this miracle of God. We're going to be adopting this beautiful girl. They'd given her a new name, which I won't share now. And somebody said it to me and they said, this looks an awful lot like Olivia. Is this Olivia? So he had done this little TikTok viral video claiming that, you know, it was just a true act of God that they were matched with this birth mother who gave them this beautiful baby, not mentioning at all that, you know, her first adoptive family was scammed out of this child and that we still had legal guardianship. So that was really infuriating. So I ended up having to hire a family attorney to try to see if we could legally get Olivia back to us, which was really expensive, and it also took a lot of time. So by the time I had retained the attorney, and by the time the attorney started working on our various plans, I had a decision to make. They were like, yes, there is a chance that you have legal ground to have Olivia return to you, but there were some technicalities of the exact timing of when papers were signed and when petitions were dissolved, and it wasn't exactly clear when this new family actually got possession of Olivia, because nobody was being honest with that timing. So there was also a chance that we would lose and that this new family would keep Olivia. So there were a couple of considerations I had. I had the financial consideration of, do I pay all of this money to this attorney and potentially lose the case and just be out all of this money? Because mind you, I was also out thousands and thousands of dollars from the quote-unquote failed adoption that I had paid for the legal fees for the adoption and the home study and all the money that I'd given birth mom too, that I couldn't get that back. So I'm like, okay, do I want to dig myself further in the hole with all these legal fees? And it might not work out anyway. But the bigger consideration was the attorney said, look, this all takes time to work itself through the court process. And this could very well drag out for months, if not a year or more. And even if you win, at that point, it could be 6 months, 8 months, a year down the road before you would actually quote unquote win. And at that point, Olivia then would have spent more time with this new family than she would have with us. And it would have been traumatizing to remove her from that family and bring her back to us, right? Like, I'm not going to do that to her. So I made the decision to just not pursue it. Financially, I just couldn't take that hit. And ethically, you know, if it was something that could have been decided within a week, then I probably would have done it. But I would have been the bad guy and I would have been doing Olivia harm if I would have pursued this. And now she's a year old and she has no memory of us and she's been with this family longer than she was with us. And now I'm traumatizing her by bringing her back to us. Like, that's not right of me to do. So I ended up not pursuing it. But that's not where the story stops. the new adoptive family, was not happy that I continued to share photos of Olivia from when she was with our family. And they tried to slap me with some other lawsuits and, all sorts of other legal action to essentially, force me to never share pictures of Olivia again, to never talk about her again, and to keep me from ever, to prevent me from ever contacting their family or Olivia in the future. So I had to hire an attorney again, another attorney, we're on attorney number 3 now, to fight all of the legal action they were trying to take to make me go away. And even though it was baseless, and they were even, you know, my attorney was like, there's no legal basis for them to actually do any of this. They're obviously trying to scare you. But I still had to hire an attorney to fight it. And I did. And they ended up dropping it. But that took more money. So they're just really terrible people. And I don't say that lightly. But I had a lot of anger for a very long time about it. Because, I mean, just the audacity of anyone to do what they did, to essentially steal a child that they know was not theirs to take ethically or potentially even legally, and to not care about the first family who was going to adopt her, and to not want to share the story of the first 6 months of her life with Olivia. Like, we have all these photos and videos of the first 6 months of her life. And I, in my first email outreach to him, I said, at the very least, can I give these to you so that when Olivia is older, she'll have these photos and videos. And he said he never wanted to hear from us again. So when Olivia gets older, like one day she's going to realize, that's weird. There's no photos of me from the time I was, birth to 6 months old. Like, that's strange. And they're either going to have to lie to her, or they're going to have to come clean that there was another family who was weeks away from adopting her that they took her from. And something tells me that she's not going to handle that well, because she shouldn't handle that well. And I had so much anger about this, especially since he's a pastor, right? Which also shouldn't be surprising, because I swear to you, evangelical right-wing Christians are just the worst people in the world. And this is a great example of that. And I really honestly don't feel anger about it anymore, because I know that at the end of the day, they are going to pay for this. When Olivia finds out when she's older, and eventually she will, it might not be till she's like 80, but eventually, she'll figure out her story, and eventually she will probably ask them questions, and they will have to deal with that emotional fallout and the guilt and the shame and her anger and her sadness. And that's their punishment, right? Like, they'll have to deal with that. And I just don't know how they sleep well at night as it is. And so I've been able to release the anger, because I know that it's not like they're getting away with this. You know, they will have to quote unquote pay for it eventually. So it was just a really rough end of last year. It was a huge financial hit to have to pay three sets of attorneys and be out all of the support that we gave Olivia's mom. And it was just a huge emotional hit. And Jack still talks about Olivia. When we pass her former daycare, he'll still say, hey, that's Olivia's school. And he'll ask, like, when do we get to see her again? And of course, the answer is never, because her parents legally tried to make us disappear forever. And so he's still processing that. I mean, I've just told him that Olivia is back with her mommy, and I kind of make excuses of, oh, well, they live kind of far away now. And, you know, when he's older, I'll tell him the truth, but he doesn't need to deal with that now. And it was also, I think, kind of traumatizing to him too, because since Olivia's mom signed adoption consents, and since we had our court date to finalize the adoption, I would talk to him about, like, we're adopting Olivia. Olivia's going to be your sister forever. And then when Olivia's mom kind of took her back, and when Olivia left us, I think he internalized that of, like, okay, well, I know I'm adopted. Like, is my birth mom going to come and take me away from you? Right. And so I think that was really hard for him to understand too, and probably a little scary and unnerving. So it was just traumatic on, like, every front possible. And, I've blocked the family on all social media because I don't want to see it and I don't want to hear it. But apparently he still is, like, going viral on TikTok talking about his gift from God that was this miraculous adoption. And but, you know, eventually all lies are uncovered and people will know the truth and they'll have to deal with that. So that is the update there, which sucks. And a lot of people have asked me, has that turned you off from adoption? Has that turned you off from supporting birth mothers? And the answer is no. Like, I think those cases are so rare. And I'm not even mad at Olivia's birth mom. Like, she was fighting an addiction. She had a lot of mental illness. She had a lot of trauma from being in the foster care system herself when she was young. Even if she did scam us out of all this money, she was broken. She was hurt. I'm mad at the adoptive parents. So it hasn't changed my feelings about supporting birth mothers, about open adoption. Not at all. That's not the reason why we're not fostering and why we're not adopting now. But I do think, like I said earlier, I definitely learned some lessons. If this were to happen again, if we could do this over, I would make sure that we have legal protections until the mother was absolutely sure that she wanted to parent. And I certainly would not give birth mom cash. I would maybe, pay utilities or pay rent directly instead of giving her cash. So there were some lessons learned, but I don't regret my decision to reunify Olivia with her mom. I mean, I could not sleep at night if I would have said, no, sorry, no give backs, right? Like, that's not how that works with human beings. So that is the update with Olivia. We have a much more exciting and positive update with Mikkel, our foster daughter, who just finished her freshman year of college and is now about to start her sophomore year of college. She is doing amazing. If you recall, she got all of these scholarships her senior year of high school so that her freshman year was completely paid for, room, board, tuition, and then some left over. She got even more scholarships during her freshman year of college. So she's like continuing to just hit it out of the ballpark. She was really interested in nursing. She was a nursing major, and now she's thinking about marketing and communications, which makes my little heart happy because that's what I do. So she's still exploring different majors and what she wants to do, as most kids do in college, but she's doing really well. She has a boyfriend who treats her really well and is very good to her and supportive of her. She's made some good friends, and she just seems, really happy, which is awesome. And we still get together and do dinner and hang out. She got a kitten, and she comes over sometimes with her cat, and Jet gets to play with the cat. And so she's doing awesome, and we are just so thrilled for her. So that's really great. Jack is also doing really awesome. We have made such strides with his ADHD diagnosis. We've done all kinds of therapies and done some medication, and he's just a rock star, man. Like, he continues to grow and thrive. He had an awesome year of pre-K last year at this amazing little preschool that was so supportive. Loved all the parents, loved all the kids. It was like, oh man, if I could keep that group of kids and that group of parents until he graduated from high school, I would have done it. So it was really sad the last day of preschool to have to say goodbye to that environment. But he's been at kindergarten for a week now, and he got student of the day one day last week, which is awesome. And his teacher says he's having great days. So, I mean, it's just amazing to look at how far we've come in 2 years. And I'm just so proud of him and thriving. One of my favorite stories about Jack recently is there's a little bench on the playground. It's actually called Jack's Buddy Bench, but it has nothing to do with my Jack. I think it was named after another kid. But it's this blue bench on the playground. And if a kid doesn't have a friend to play with, or if they're feeling lonely, they go and sit on the bench. And then anyone who sees a kid on the bench is supposed to go over and try to engage that kid in play, right? It's a way to make friends, that kids don't feel like they're all alone. And every day after school, Jack has given me a report on who has been on the bench and how he always goes over there and introduces himself and asks them if they want to play. And one day he told me there was no one on the buddy bench, and he was actually sad about it. He was like, Mom, no one was on the buddy bench today. And I'm like, well, that's good, honey. That means everyone had a friend to play with. But he was just so excited to be the friend to the person who needed one. And that, it makes me so proud of him, because, you know, I'd love him to grow up and be like ridiculously wealthy and successful and handsome. But more than all of those things, I want him to grow up to be kind. And so it's really awesome to see already that he is proactively looking for ways to be kind. And I'm like choking up now, because it just makes me so stinking proud of him. So that is our update. Or at least that's our update of all of our kids. So at this point, well, I'll be back up a little bit. So after everything that happened with Olivia, I decided that my goal for 2022 was to simplify and minimize things. I had just taken on way too much last year. I had a teenager, I had a newborn, I had Jack. I had had a couple of surgeries last year for some health issues. I was just completely overstretched financially, emotionally, mentally, physically, and I was not feeling like myself. I'd let myself go. I was becoming like an angry parent, which I never am. And so I just decided, as a reaction to all of that, I just wanted to make things really simple in my life. And we had this big five-bedroom house that we lived in previously, because my whole idea was that we would adopt more, we would foster more, and I wanted a bunch of space for the kids. But after the Olivia issue and after Mikkel went to college, I realized that at least for the next few years, I needed to get back down to basics, that it just needed to be me and Jack, and we would help in other ways, but that fostering and adoption, at least for right now, was not what either one of us needed. So we didn't need this big, huge house anymore. And instead, I found this adorable little tiny house. I mean, it's not really a tiny house, but it's a house that is tiny. I think it's like 1,000 square feet. And our last house was almost 3,200 square feet. This tiny little house, just a little two-bedroom. It's so cute. It is 3 blocks away from Jack's school. It's in the neighborhood with all of his friends. We can walk to everything. It's just so perfect. It's in like one of the best neighborhoods, I think, in the entire state. So we moved there January 1st. Talk about a fresh start. And it's just been awesome. I was concerned that having such a small space would make me feel like I was stuck or trapped. But it's been really awesome. And it's just been so nice. And I think Jack has really loved having just this little magical time with me in our little home and just being together, the two of us. And I intentionally got this two-bedroom home. One of the other reasons why was because I knew if I had even just one extra bedroom that I would be unable to say no to fostering or hosting. And I just didn't want to even put myself in that position. So right now we don't even have room if we wanted to foster or host through Safe Families right now. So we won't be doing that for the foreseeable future. I think I want to wait until Jack is a little bit older and he can, communicate better if this is something that he wants to do. I want him to be able to consent to the process at this point. And I need to give myself a break too. I have a lot to work on for myself physically and emotionally. I'm going to be turning 40 in 6 months. And so I really want to focus on being the healthiest in every way possible that I can be when I hit 40. So that's my goal now. And it's just been a really great adjustment. So I still have an active foster license, frankly, because it's just easier to keep it up than it is to let it go and have to start all over again. And that way too, in case there is truly a short-term need, like, hey, can you just do this for 24 hours? We would probably find a way to make that work. But we'll not be actively accepting placements or hosting, and certainly not adopting for the near future. So that is where we are with that update. And I'm actually really, really happy about that. But we still continue to do what we can in the community. I volunteer with Safe Families. I'm actually volunteering for a recovery house that's not far from our neighborhood for mothers or pregnant women with children under 2 years old who are facing addiction and substance abuse issues. It's supportive housing, and there's lots of help that we give them over there. So I'm really excited about that. We opened up a little free pantry in the front of our house and our front yard so that people can come and help themselves to free food and hygiene items and even little toys for kids if they are struggling. So we're still, of course, finding other ways to help our neighbors and get involved in the community. But for right now, fostering and hosting and adopting is not for us. Never say never. That is one thing I talk about repeatedly on this podcast, is that every time I have said never in my life, something always surprises me. So it might be something we do in the future, but just not right now. So this update took way longer than I thought it would, guys. I was envisioning like a 15-minute update and then I would get to my new topic, but clearly here we are past half an hour. So I will save my actual topic for part two, and I'm going to talk about foster parents who still don't understand that their job is not to root for the parents to fail so they can adopt the child. really grinds my gears, as they say. So I will get on my soapbox and talk about that in part 2.